people are like, oh, I hope I don't say the F word. Well, we encourage it here. This is real life.
Well, and as you know, I don't have a very clean mouth when I'm not at work.
Well, but here's the thing people have to understand. Like, nurses are not, school nurses maybe, but we are not these pristine.
We're not angels.
No, we're not these tidy little packages that that never say bad words. I think.
We are actually probably more inclined to say bad words.
And not just bad words, but also like disgusting things, foul words. Like,
oh no.
Like
one of my favorites. My favorite things on rescue was chili day, when like we all brought chili and we were like, there were a bunch of us sitting around eating chili and talking about poop. And one of the respiratory therapists came in and was like, you guys realize how like disgusting this is? Like, you're eating chili and talking about diarrhea.
And you guys are like,
hey, you want to pass me the sour cream?
This is Nursing Uncensored. Your host, Adrienne Benning, invites you to listen in on real conversations about all things in the nursing world. This podcast is intended for nurses, nursing students, and allied health professionals, but non-medical folk will probably get a kick out of us too. If you like what you hear, subscribe and share. Hey everybody, Adrienne back again, and this week we're going to be dropping in on the conversation I had with my old pal Lindsay. She's a traveling nurse and a cool human, and I can talk to her for hours and hours on end, and actually we did, so this took a really long time to edit, hence me putting this episode out weeks later. We talk about a million things in this episode, including how she caught the travel bug, weighing the pros and cons of different contracts and locations, her adventure muppet. We talk about licensing, getting tricked into wiping butts of patients that don't really need you to. Trust me, there's not a dull moment around here, so let's go ahead and get on in there.
People poop all the time.
Sometimes constantly. It never stops.
You know? Well, so I'm actually on an OBS unit right now, and it's like a totally different world.
Yeah. So I want to actually bring some format to this show. Go ahead.
I made the joke about wearing professional pants.
Please tell me you're not wearing any pants.
Well, Nick goes, do you even need to be wearing pants?
And no.
I was like, oh, I guess not.
For those that are listening to this, you are a traveling nurse.
I am.
You used to not be a traveling nurse. You used to be a stationary nurse right here next to me. And then you got this idea to go be a wild adventurer. And now your Instagram photos are so much fucking cooler than they were when you were just hanging out around here.
Aren't they? They are.
But you've done some cool stuff. So will you give us kind of like the timeline of where you've been? And then we can go back through and we can talk about each one, because I have lots of questions, because we haven't really even talked about this in an informal setting.
Yeah, no, that's true. Do you want like the whole story of like how I decided to travel kind of thing?
I would love that, because I feel like that's such an individual process.
Yeah.
That, yeah, we need your story.
So I became a nurse in, 2014, after being a tech with you, and really loved my job. Actually, really, really loved my job.
Mm-hmm.
We are really fortunate at the university where we work, to kind of have this like amazing team, and I gained so much knowledge and so much experience with that. But I was also going through a time in my life where kind of in the middle of a divorce, and right when as I was graduating, I was moving, kind of that whole thing, right? Where
tons of transition in every direction.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't feel grounded in any way. And then started working, living out in the woods. I don't know if you remember, I had the tiny cabin in the woods.
Yeah. Couple dogs living in the woods.
Yeah. And totally loved that. Loved that. Loved my job. And then kind of was realizing that I was spending all of my time outside of work traveling. So I was, you know, like in the 2 years that I was at the U, I went to Seattle, San Francisco, Minneapolis, West Virginia, North Carolina. I mean, I was traveling and there were more.
For fun. You were just going everywhere.
South Dakota. Yeah. And I was just doing, like, I was spending all of my time trying to see all these different places and do all these different things. And then I got a blood clot. It was the first time in my life that my body failed me.
And it's got to be that moment where you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, I'm doing everything right.
I mean, there was actually, I'm a healthy woman and I like to be outside and all that stuff, but I definitely, I'm a horrible water drinker. Drinking water.
Me too. Nurses who actually don't drink water.
Yeah. You just kind of forget about it just as you forget about peeing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like our fluid balance is all screwed up. But yeah, so I got this blood clot and I realized that I also developed anxiety and I've never had that either. So I've never really, I mean, I've had bits of it, but I've never experienced it where I felt like all of a sudden, you know, like I don't have forever. I thought I had forever. I don't have forever. And I know that. I know I don't have forever. I'm a palliative nurse. I watch,
it takes something like you having a health problem to make you go, wait, what? Yeah. Really? Me? Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've broken bones before and stuff, but other than that, like I really have, you know.
But let me guess, you probably broke those bones doing some stuff that was really healthy.
So I broke my collarbone twice on my bike. I broke
biking. Oh, see, yes.
Mm. Yeah. I broke my finger, and a couple of my toes rowing.
It's not like I was on my fifth margarita.
No, I broke my ankle, hiking.
It's like sports injuries.
Yeah. those are kind of, I don't know, in some ways those are kind of trophies, right? Of like, like I can tell that story of like, hey, that one time that I was like hiking across this creek, whatever. And that can be a reality a little bit too. But this is the first time that I just all of a sudden realized that I was spending all my money and all my time traveling and maybe a really good way to travel and kind of see the world was to travel
and to get paid to do it. Yeah, basically. Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of made a really kind of brash decision. I told my mom and she was horrified.
Oh yeah. Everyone on the unit was like, oh no, wait,
yeah.
Where are you going?
So the other part of that was that I wanted to go to Alaska. Mm-hmm. And so I actually, I had a lot of PTO that I actually planned on using and coming back. So I was like, I'm just going to spend 2 months in Alaska and I'm going to come back to the U and work. I just like, I need a big trip. I need like a big, I need a movement. I like for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, our manager, who I won't name, but kind of was like, I can't cover you. We're too short. I can't cover you. So that was kind of denied. And then I was kind of like, well, I feel like you're trying to call my bluff right now. So I'm going to Alaska anyway, and I'm going to travel to Alaska.
Like, peace out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was, I don't know. That was me like kind of dipping my toes in the water. Like, I think I'm going to travel, but I'm going to maybe just go to Alaska first.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, nope. So, Alaska's not a choice. So I'm going to make it a choice. Like, it's going to be a choice. Unfortunately, as you know, there was a low census that year and contracts were canceled. So I didn't actually make it. My first assignment to just make a huge shift was in Baltimore, Maryland, where I lived in downtown Baltimore, Maryland.
The opposite of Alaska.
Absolutely.
Pretty much as opposite as you can possibly get. But also fucking good for you that the universe was like, sorry, dream trip is canceled. And, you're basically like, well, here we go.
Yeah. So I worked for the University of Maryland Medical Center, UMMC, on a unit that was very busy, very, very busy unit, rotating shifts there. The kind of interesting thing about that job, my first experience with traveling, was that I was hired for a unit that didn't actually open. And so where I went from, you know, I worked on the same floor for 5 years, basically, at the U.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was floating for the first 8 weeks. So I was rotating and floating. And so it was the biggest change, I think.
That sounds really disorienting almost. Like, what day is it and where am I?
Right.
And who are you?
It was really isolating. And so actually, I had a moment where I thought that I couldn't do it. Really questioning kind of, why did I put myself in a situation? As I like was talking about earlier, you know, I had all of this stuff and I didn't feel like I had a foundation. And so I pick up and move, which, you know, it doesn't make any sense. But I had been in such a state of transition for so long. It actually kind of, I guess, almost felt normal.
Mm-hmm.
But my job was my stability in that. The U was my stability, the team, the, you know, like I knew what I was walking into on most, on any given day. In this situation, obviously, I didn't. I was rotating and I was on a different unit almost every day. I was working with different people, different managers. Different
well, partners. And do you know anyone in Baltimore, like on a social level? Like,
not at all.
So you essentially like had no constant players
right.
in your day to day.
Absolutely.
That's gotta be really hard. Like I would yeah. have that, that would be a struggle, but clearly the timeline moves forward because you did do this.
I did do it. And I actually, so after that first 8 weeks, the unit that I was hired for actually opened. And I was actually hired to, this is kind of confusing. I was hired to cover the nurses who were cross-training for that unit. So I didn't actually work on that unit, but I was, does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So, yeah. Anyway, so finally after 8 weeks, you know, we have 13 week contracts. After 8 weeks, I actually got to a point where I had a little bit of stability, got to meet some people, hang out a little bit, get to know people better.
Like more than halfway through, basically.
Right. Oh yeah. I mean, the funny thing is the last night that we were actually working on the unit, the girls asked me to go out. And so I went out with them for the first time on my last night.
You know what? That's happened before, even where I've worked with travelers that have passed through and like three shifts before they leave. I'm like, oh my God, you're so cool. Why didn't I meet you when you first right. got here? Like, oh, that's such a killer.
Briefly, so my next place. So after, you know, last day, pick up, decide to take this position in Valdosta, Georgia. So
Georgia, yet again, another place totally unlike Alaska.
Yeah.
Unlike Baltimore.
It's kind of funny because I've said at all times, like my end goal really is Alaska. Like that is mm-hmm. what I want to do. I want to go to Alaska. But I also like, I want to do it in the summer. And yeah. so what that means is that I'm competing actually for jobs. I was offered a position in like some tiny island hospital, basically it's not even a hospital. It's just like a point of care. So you basically just ship, mm-hmm. you know, it's like a hospital that has like maybe two ICU beds mm-hmm. and you're basically just waiting to ship out
yeah.
or send home. And so I was like, that's not what I want either. That's still, I always look at the end of any assignment. I do look at Alaska.
As just to see what's open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so I did an Epic conversion. So a hospital that was using a different charting system decided to switch to Epic, which is the only thing I actually have ever used until now. But mm-hmm. Went there. So that was super fun, even though kind of in the middle of nowhere, there were over 100 travelers in-house in that hospital during the conversion.
Wow.
So,
yeah, I've used to kind of talk for a second about Epic. charting systems, like when I did clinicals, mm-hmm. and by far Epic is the only one that doesn't look like a web browser from like 1995.
So they use Cerner here, and Cerner's like okay, but I still hold Epic as the gold standard. And unfortunately, I have to say, they did this Epic rollout. The Epic that South Georgia Medical Center got actually is probably the worst Epic I've ever seen. And you've worked with Epic before, and then you're like, this is literally the worst Epic I've ever used. Mm-hmm. And I started
discount package.
Well, so that's kind of, I was like, God, did they like totally get the clearance version? And they were like, no, they got the Cadillac. And I was like, no, they didn't. Cause I've worked with the Cadillac and this is not it. Like,
this don't work like that.
No, I mean, and I kept showing them like all these different things too. Like this is supposed to be able to do this. And there were certain applications of Epic that I was like, all this, like, this is supposed to work, you know, like mm-hmm. it was just kind of this invalid like section that's like, no, this, like, this does stuff.
Yeah. Like usually this part is really helpful when you can actually see it,
but like, it just didn't work, you know? And you're like, what the hell? Like, why?
So you're trying to convince people learning to use a new system that it doesn't suck when really it kind of is sucking.
I was seriously like, you guys are going to love Epic. It's so much better.
And then like, you were like, why are all these pages blank?
I mean, I was staying, all of us were staying until like 9 o'clock at night, like charting, because they also, they didn't have any like, you know, assessment unchanged from previous assessment or like mm-hmm. unchanged or just like, they didn't even have the like within defined limits, like mm-hmm. XWD stuff. They don't have that. So you have to chart every 4 hours. In the way that Baltimore challenged me to like be strong as a nurse, because I had to be, like, I was on my own, you know, I didn't have a team because nobody knew me. I didn't know anybody. Valdosta was a place where the acuity was really high. The hospital was super understaffed. And I mean, you just bust your ass. So I actually did extend there when the travelers were there, when there were 100 travelers there, like, there was no overtime. There was nothing. They ended up only keeping like 16 of the travelers, which partially probably because they need to burn that place to the ground and start over.
Oh boy.
It's a beautiful new facility, but there's just a lot of bureaucratic BS that, you know, everywhere.
Yeah. But it's really frustrating when you see how much it keeps you from doing like good patient care.
Right.
Like, well, I can't do this, but if I could, it would be so much better. Stupid fucking rules.
You know, we end up being stunted by rules and by stuff that shouldn't. Well, and, you know, the management on that unit, I didn't meet the manager of that floor until I was like 3 months in. Mm-hmm. I did end up extending. Money was really good. And I mean, cost of living super low. And so I was like enjoying the money.
Saving up for a rainy day.
Stability of it was mm-hmm. really, I mean, something that I really couldn't pass up. So did that. And then finally, the summer was coming and I was like, I am not going to be in South Georgia. Like, we're talking like Florida, Georgia line.
Yeah.
Like
swamp-y.
Yeah.
Summer.
Well, and I have a fear of alligators, which I call it an irrational fear, but when you live down there,
no, so that's not,
you're like
no.
walking your like 35, 40 pound dog, you're kind of like, I mean, it's a real fear.
Well, especially since, you know, I've seen those TV shows where the gators like in the pond, in the condominium, like complex, and they have to like get somebody to come get it out of there because there's just like kids playing over there and stuff. Yeah.
They're like playing the local, like the apartment complex pool.
Right.
Not play. Right.
No, this is no, but I mean, I understand what you mean. However alligators play, that's where they do it. That is a real concern. That's why, you know, I know a couple people that are like considering like moving to the Florida area. And I'm like, do you know how big the bugs are in that part of the world?
Yeah. No, and it's just, you know, the other thing is when we were talking about me, like, I really like to be outside and do that stuff. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you really can't do, like, there's just not as much there. Like, there's not sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
So
much less fantastic bike trails weaving all through.
Right. Well, and that was the other thing. So I bring my bike everywhere I go. And actually Baltimore is surprisingly bike friendly in the downtown area. So like I did ride my bike just like through
town. I would hope that any metropolitan, like super urban, high density areas gotta have some provision for bikers.
Right. I mean, yeah. But it's not the case. You know, Minneapolis is really great. I know that you were just there shortly a little while ago or whatever, but they have great bike trails.
Yeah.
You can really kind of get around. But yeah, Baltimore, I could get around on my bike most of the time. Did get vandalized a little bit. Lost a seat.
Mm, yeah.
Who takes a fucking seat?
People who don't have nice seats of their own.
So my seat is a piece of junk, actually. But,
And so somebody who clearly had a worse situation than you going on.
Yeah. Well, so what I learned, actually, is what they do is that they take the seat off and then they like start going around and seeing how long it's been sitting there to see how long they have to like take it, I guess.
Uh-huh.
The kind of ironic thing, I don't know, maybe it's an Alanis Morissette kind of ironic, but was that I was in the bike shop getting a lock for my bike because I wanted a new lock because I felt like my lock wasn't a good one. And I walk out.
Right.
I mean, I had some sort of premonition or something that something was going to get fucked up, but, but you know what, to be honest, lesson learned, it could have been my bike.
So you were in Georgia, you were like, summer's coming. I got to get out of the swamp before I get swampy myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you went to
Flagstaff, Arizona.
Uh-huh. Which for months I was like, how's New Mexico? And you're like, I'm not in New Mexico.
Someday.
And I would be like, oh yeah, I totally forgot. I'll remember. And then I'll be like, how's New Mexico?
So this is kind of my first experience with the Southwest. And
you're really just hitting all the corners, aren't you?
So my goal is actually to go cross country. Right. So I'm almost there. We'll see. I just extended my contract though. So I'm doing another 13 weeks here. I very much love it here. The mountain has done good for me. Done well.
Well, I imagine that's probably where you should have started out to be, you know?
Yeah.
Like here's a mountain, go climb it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did climb a mountain.
Kinda. Oh, see? Yep.
A little mountain. I went up to like 10,000 feet.
Ladies and gentlemen, she climbed a little mountain. Just a little one.
It was like 10, it's like 10,000 feet. it took me a while. I took Tildy with me.
And your adorable dog.
Tildy is my dog. My adorable dog just turned one, who's turning out to actually be quite a little adventure dog. So that makes me, she's been a good little companion, which is surprising because I was kind of like, man, I bought a prissy dog.
Like, nope.
I somehow got a prissy dog. I have another week off before I start my second contract, and I'm hoping to get her out on the water.
Ooh,
and see how she does. Yeah. So I wanna see if I can get her to like kayak or like stand up paddleboard or like do something.
Oh my god. Oh my god, the cute is killing me.
I mean, I have like really romanticized.
I just pictured your dog perched perfectly at the end of a paddleboard. Oh my god, that would be so perfect.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I think I could do it enough to get the picture, but like the next picture obviously is like flipping over.
Both of you in the water.
Flashing. So, check out my Instagram because
it's coming. It's going to happen.
But my Instagram, that's actually why I started traveling, was just so that I could get good Instagram pictures.
Well, honey, it's working because you've re-upped your contract, but in the amount of time you've been there, you've done like, you've gone to the canyons, lots of gorges, lots of beautiful deserty things that keep happening on your Instagram. Mm-hmm. Someone at work the other day was like, shit, she's doing it right. Like whatever she's doing. So you've been you finally made it to an area where you get to kind of live your best outdoor life, but you're also working still. So
I am working.
You get this time off between contracts, but you said that like Georgia was kind of like a short staff shit show. What's it like here now that is this the sweet spot? You finally have the adventure. Is the job like a little better too? Or like what's the, well,
So I'm working on an obs unit.
That's what you're saying, that it's kind of weird.
It's a really big shift. You know, you go from like a step down.
Right, like damn near critical care, where like you really have to be paying attention.
Right. So I was on a cardiac step down unit when I was in Georgia. And so high acuity, low staff, super busy. Like you got to be on it. You got to be moving. And like I said, I was there a lot until like 9 o'clock at night, charting kind of all the things. And so this was a night shift on an obs unit. I did extend my contract, but I'm not on the obs unit anymore. Mm-hmm. I took a day shift on a med-surg unit. So we'll see. I'm always trying to reach for the step down, but we'll see. I'm not there yet. I actually was talking to another nurse who was just about to start traveling about taking step down positions and versus med-surg positions. I think when I first started traveling, I was like, I'm a step down nurse and I want that high acuity and stuff. But you know, those med-surg units take everything. You get everything all the time and you never know what you're going to get. You never know what you're going to face. I mean, and that's nursing in general, but obs unit was really different for me. I am used to, I think as somebody that is coming from like an inpatient unit where we cry because a woman that we have known for 5 years is coming to a place where she's going to have to make some decisions about, you know, the end of her life. You don't have that.
Right.
You don't have that with us.
This different connection with your patient, yeah. Like in and out.
It's more of this sounds kind of funny, but it's more of a show, right? You have these 12 hours with these patients. You grin and bear it because you have 12 hours. You probably will never see them again. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of place too, that patients are coming from everywhere because this is a regional hospital. So you're not necessarily where, you know, we have that a little bit at the university too, like mm-hmm. every, you know, surrounding areas are feeding in.
Right.
But you know, here you have tourists that are like, you know, at the canyons, at, you know, either the Grand Canyons, the Slot Canyons, they're hiking. So Mount Humphreys is here, and that's the tallest place in Arizona. It's the tallest peak. And that's here in Flagstaff. So you also have, you just have people here. That
otherwise wouldn't, like you have a lot of tourism.
You have athletes that are coming into training because of the high elevation. Mm-hmm. You just have, so it's different. The type of nursing I'm doing is different. Like, you know, I always do my assessments and everything like that, but it's a lot more focused, mm-hmm. you know, like people are coming in. I'm just going to say this. I don't know if you have to, but no one in Arizona, I think, has a gallbladder. Take them out of everyone.
There's like, a birth.
People come in and they're like, I think I might have a fever. And they're like, we're going to take out your gallbladder. I don't know if like they get like a special on it or something, but that's like a real thing.
We get a rebate for every 10 that we do.
Like, I'm not even kidding. I've never had so many lap chole patients in my life.
So actually that's kind of funny because I had the semester of lap choles. I was on a med surg unit for like my second to last semester of nursing school. And I swear every weekend my instructor was like, I swear I don't do it on purpose. But like the first week I was there, I had a pre-surgical lap chole. Like another couple weeks later, I had someone who had just had a lap chole. Then I had a patient that had like was about to discharge after a lap chole. So basically, I felt like I was doing like all of the stages of lap chole that semester. That was like all I did.
That's what I feel like I do.
Yeah.
Like I basically walked in. I mean, like I've made jokes about it. Like I've asked families, like, do any of you guys have your gallbladder?
Because all of them are like,
from this area, I feel like we don't.
Does nobody eat fatty food out there? I mean, what's the deal?
Nick, agree with me that nobody has gallbladders.
Not in Northern Arizona.
They're starting to not even be born with them. They're like, we don't need these. We'll just you, like natural selection. There's no, yeah. So that's interesting. So you're What else are you seeing a lot of? Is it like, I mean, are you getting like the, oh, I hurt myself skiing? Like, are you getting well, those people?
Not ski season. So not skiing injuries.
Well, you know, okay. So excuse me, God, it's June. I'm supposed to know these things.
June.
I do live in this country. I do know what the climate is there.
So what do we see a lot of? So we see a lot of like post-calf patients.
Chest pain.
Chest pain. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pacer. Yeah. A lot of actually cardiac stuff. So, but like stuff that would or could be outpatient, but
sure.
They like run late and they want just a couple extra hours of eyes on them kind of thing.
Right.
But yeah, like ablations, pacemaker placement, post-calf or pre-calf actually.
So yeah. Very different than the world you were born into, which is like, you had a transplant. You're going to be here for the next 120 days.
No,
like,
no lung transplants, no real oxygen. Actually, everybody's on oxygen.
Is everybody basically just on 2 liters? I feel two liters.
Which a lot will just take off because I'm like, do you wear oxygen at home? No. Okay.
Well, you probably don't need this one. Liter.
But you know, the other thing is that's kind of interesting when we're talking about altitude is that altitude has some serious effects on people.
Uh-huh.
Physical effects. Mm-hmm. Actually, even when I first moved up here, I diagnosed myself. We don't do that as nurses. But
never.
Basically, I had like chronic altitude sickness. I was sick like for kind of a long time with just having a really hard time breathing.
Just like lightheaded, dizzy.
Yeah.
Feeling kind of sick.
So driving in, we went to Frisco, Colorado. Frisco, Colorado was kind of the first high altitude place that we stopped. I was out hiking. My Instagram, I have a beautiful picture of like a mountain range, blue sky, the whole thing. That was Frisco.
Mm.
And out hiking around the mountains over there. And all of a sudden I was just like, I can't breathe. I feel like I'm going to throw up. Ended up coming back down and realizing that I needed to lay down.
Okay.
I woke up in the middle of the night kind of panicking, and I think it was really just breathing, right? You know?
Mm.
So I was like kind of giving myself some anxiety, just trying to breathe.
Which is like a vicious cycle, because anybody who's ever had trouble breathing knows that then you get anxious, and then when you're anxious, you can't fucking breathe.
I know.
And so it can.
But as we know, probably better than, I mean, not to be like better than anybody, but we really do see that like on rescue. Yeah. You know, you see this like,
it's like, well, you were saturating just fine until you started breathing 56 times a minute. Like,
I don't want to wear my BiPAP. It's uncomfortable. Well, you're uncomfortable actually because your CO2 is really high.
Yeah, because you need to blow that
you need to blow that CO2 off, put the BiPAP on. It's and it is a vicious cycle. So my experience with like the OBS unit has been one of, I go back and forth. It's not where I think I excel. And I watch these nurses bust their asses. Like,
yeah, you know, it's not about work. It's, I imagine it's more about like the kind of nursing you
right.
want to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like I said before, I feel like I put on a little song and dance every day. Cause it's like, you know, I'm going to take care of you and we're going to get through the night kind of thing, but it's not the type of nursing that I necessarily walk out and feel like I did my best, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I think it's
a little easier to measure your accomplishments when you have someone that's tanking and then they don't tank. Like, that's a pretty definitive line that we're crossing here between like okay and not okay. Like, someone on observation, what if they have a bad night? Like, they might have to be admitted for a longer period to a different unit. Like, I can see how you are filling an important role, but it's not like you're saving their life in that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and shit happens no matter where you are. Like, we definitely,
well,
we had a rapid the other day, and you know, you have those things. you have those things, but
just a different environment. And like
started, I was really like, oh, let me do all the things that I would do for like a patient who's been laid out for 14 days, you know? And then I realized like, oh, you're 24 and you're getting your gallbladder out. I don't necessarily need to look at your butt.
Yeah. Like I don't need to look at your sacral skin.
Right. I mean, like you're 24, you walk like mm-hmm. this actually right now is probably the longest that you've laid down in like 24 years, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
and it's always when you're charting and you're just like, at least in our epic, when you are able to chart just like WDL.
Right.
And you're like, that's the end of it. Nope. No yeah. swelling, no neuro deficits, no skin tear, nothing.
Yeah.
That would be so nice, but at the same time, so weird. Like right. I remember when I started floating, when I was working neuro all the time, and there you've got people that like literally are totally dependent upon you. And then right. you float to like Gen Med and you're like trying to get people out of bed and you're like trying to take them by the hand. Like they're so fragile. And then they're like, no, really, I'm cool. I could just walk in there. And you're like, yeah. Oh,
there was a patient on the unit. This wasn't actually my patient, but just there was a patient on the unit the other day that had a history of seizures. And so the nurse asked him to call out every time he needed to get up and go to the bathroom and do whatever. And I ended up having to answer the call. And I walked in and I was like, oh, can I help you? And he's like, oh, I just need to go to the bathroom. And I was like, oh, you guys like in his early 40s. I was like, do you use a walker or anything? He's like, no. And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like,
you're like, why do I need to be here?
Yeah. Well, and so I kind of was like, how do you move? Perfectly.
Like this.
But, I mean, he totally worked. He moved fine. But he did have a history of seizures. And so I asked him later when I went back in the next time, because the nurses said that she just wanted somebody with him because he had a history of seizures. And I said, when did you have your last seizure? And he said, I think like 9 years ago. And I was like, oh.
You're probably fine now.
I mean, I think we have to, there's a hard balance like that I'm not good at working in OBS because I treat people with like this high acuity thing. This was not my patient. And I actually have gotten to a place where I'm a lot more lax, but like at the beginning of this contract, I would have totally done the same thing. Like, oh, you have seizures? Like, call me to get up.
When really it's like, oh, you had one seizure 9 years ago after right. a concussion. Like, right. oh, okay.
So yeah. So, I mean, I feel like we have to be very conscious of patients too, because
yeah.
for him, I mean, this is a man who like, he was not there for seizures. He had a seizure 9 years ago. He can move fine, and giving him a little bit of autonomy and respect too. I right. know that sounds
no, but it's true. Like when you're walking in to help someone to the bathroom who's of complete sound mind and body, and they're like 20 years older than you are, and you're like, okay, sir, I'm going to help you into the bathroom. And they're like, thanks. Yeah. I'm fine. I live like, my life outside of this hospital, completely independent of anyone.
And again, else. Yeah, you know, it's like, I don't even remember what he was there for. I think he was there for like, I don't know.
Totally
but I do
unrelated
know,
to the
I do know that this man did not want me to see his penis. Did not want me to like walk
hand.
You know like, I mean and yeah. that's the difference to some extent of OBS patients
right
you know and I know you get on those other floors where you do have patients that unfortunately you do have to have that awkward moment where you're like I understand that you used to do this by yourself but right now you can't
right like I'm very sorry that I'm the age that I am and I'm about to wipe your balls but
right.
But this is where we are and but, this is a professional role and this
yeah,
is
and
what we have to do like
we're gonna move on from here at you know but at this moment like yeah I'm using a baby wipe
yes
and I'm wiping your butt
yes
and, you know
which
that
you
might
know
not be our reality in a week but right now
right
that's what it is.
But it's true.
But
it's hard to have those moments with someone who you're like, well, you know, if it hadn't been for the like hand surgery you had, you could totally right. do this on your
yeah,
own.
I mean,
like,
right.
I'm sorry you burned both palms of your hand. Now bend over.
And then the funny thing is, you know, you also have those patients too that you're like, you're going home in 2 days. why are you bending over?
Yeah, the total opposite. Because that's the number one. See, it's one thing if you need it, like you're for whatever reason, you genuinely need me. But if you are just like, you're just in the hospital and ordinarily you wipe your own ass and you have no trouble with it. Yeah. Don't do the one where they like, it's like they're about to be frisked by the police.
Yeah.
They assume the position. They'll take a minute. They'll turn around. They'll lean against the bed or the chair, spread their legs. Like they do the little wobble to get their feet spread apart. And then they stick it out for you. And you're like, if you can maneuver into all of those positions, then just reach back there.
Like, hey, you know what? Actually, just do me this favor real fast. While you're like bent over like that and holding yourself up.
While your foot's up on the bed.
Back and just like, do it yourself.
Yeah, because that totally happens.
And I do it sometimes where I'll wipe somebody and be like, wait,
why did I just get taken?
But like my job actually is to help you. And so if my job is to help you, then what I should be doing is being like, let me see you do it, which again is like, you know, not necessarily position I want to have. I don't want to watch you wipe.
To make sure you're getting a thorough you know, job done.
I don't want to do that. And why do you want me to?
Yeah, and that's just it. Then you have to wonder, because you do have to be careful, because you're like, okay, is this therapeutic? Do you really need this? Do you feel like this is going to help you get better? Or really, are you just being a pervo and, you know, you want the pretty young nurse to wipe your
butt? Yeah, I mean,
because you get both, you never know. And you can't call people out and be like, wait a minute, are you being pervy? You can't do that.
Yeah.
You have to just be like, okay, well...
I actually,
this is
kind of, I don't even know if this is just a story, but I had a patient who was hard of hearing the other day, and he actually didn't have, the batteries ran out on his hearing aids. And so you ended up, sweet old man, older gentleman, you have to kind of bend down, get in his ear so he can hear. And even then he like, wasn't great. But every time you do that, he would like, put his hand on my thigh. And so I was like trying to maneuver my position. And finally, you know, I got to a place where I was like, you know, I think he's super scared. Like he was pretty sick. He was having his pacer was failing.
Mm-hmm.
So his ejection fraction, obviously, do I have to explain what ejection fraction is?
No, I mean, folks can certainly Google it. We can always ask Alexa later. Woke her up. No, never mind, Alexa.
Sorry, Alexa. Maybe next time.
Basically, this man's heart was not pumping like it should have been.
Right. And so,
he felt the need to put his hand on your thigh.
So he was pretty sick. He was there for like a pre-revision. So basically, the next day, they were going to play with his tinker a little bit and his pacer and make sure that it was working properly. But the funny thing about that was I thought, you know, he's sick. He's hard of hearing. Like, he's like a sweet old man. And then the next day, his family brought his batteries in. And I was his nurse again, actually. And he ended up, damn it. He ended up saying that he wished they hadn't brought his batteries in, because then I wasn't getting as close so he couldn't touch me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was giving this man the benefit of the doubt, because I truly, and even, you know, even after all this time, which, you know, I'm not like a seasoned nurse or anything, but, you know, with a pretty good amount of experience, people are inherently good.
Mm-hmm.
I will stick to that forever. But man, that guy was a dirty old man. He wasn't a fucking gentleman.
Right. And that happens where you think you're doing something really like altruistic and therapeutic. Yeah. And then you find out that really the whole time they've just been looking down your shirt.
Yeah, motherfucker.
And you know, this is a pervasive problem in this industry, because, you know, it is predominantly, I mean, we got more and more men and people, non-binary folk in among our ranks, but by and large, it's a lot of young women. So, you know, I've had a number of comments made throughout, both as a nursing assistant and as a nurse. And it's usually by people that are old enough that they should not be saying that to anyone remotely close to my age, because it's like, do you realize, like, I'm your great grandchild's age as you're trying to snake your hand up my leg? Like,
yeah.
And, you know, if it's somebody who has some delirium or dementia, they've got a pass. Okay. They've got a reason. You got a brain bleed or something that's making you act funny. I get that. But if you're just like, oh, I'm hospitalized, this is my opportunity to slap you as you walk by the side of the bed. Well, I got no tolerance for that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's no, the same. And I've also spoken up for like younger or, you know, not necessarily younger, but like less experienced professionals where they're like, I keep doing that, and you go in there and you have to be the one that's like, listen,
yeah,
oh, we will take good care of you, but there will be none of that, young man.
You know, I do have,
you have no problem holding your own, I'm sure,
right? Most of the time, like in this situation, I have to be,
but honest, that, but in that situation, you really think that there's, I mean, there's like a
I thought he was just out. Like, yeah, he was just, he couldn't hear me, he was like kind of making a connection, whatever, which is fine, you know. And I hold patients' hands and I rub patients' backs and I do those things. Right. And, you know, I do believe that, there is some validation and, importance in physical contact.
Of course.
You know, you know, there's a line. But I do think that's important. Yeah. This was a situation where I was like, I'm pretty, like, it was my lower thigh, my knee-ish area, that I was comfortable with. If he like, but yeah, I mean,
but just the same, like, yeah, it is.
So like, I was kind of thinking like he, you know, he was scared. He was making contact because of that. And then told maybe.
Well, it just, I think it just it drives home the point that like, as nurses, we are not just like trying to read people's labs and make their health better, but we are like, we are behaviorists and we have to be able to decipher, like, am I in a situation that is inappropriate that I need to stop? Can I give this person the benefit of the doubt? Or, you know, is it sometimes just one of those situations where it's like, well, I don't really have a ton of recourse here and this person needs my care. So, you know, how do I field this with the least amount of trauma to myself and others possible?
And so to move on to that a little bit, actually, I just had a recent, I shut my Facebook off, recently, and I just on the whole patient thing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So, did something happen?
No, you know, honestly, nothing happened with me. A patient asked for my information. And my instant response was, I don't have it, because I had actually just recently turned it off. And I turned it off actually just for personal reasons. Like, I felt like it was such a time waste. Adrian, I'm having a moment where I'd like to be outside more than on my phone.
Yeah.
Like, and so and that's like my own shit, but,
you don't need to dive into that, but that actually doesn't sound like something you need to qualify. Like, I want to be outside and not on my phone. I don't think you need to follow that up with any other like rationalizing statement.
I'm horrified by it, actually. Like, I got a message from her the other day that was like, did you get off Facebook? And I was like, yeah.
Well, because, you know, when you're traveling, your parents see that as like a direct line to what you're doing all the time. So maybe if you're not Facebook every day, you need to just like text them a photo of where you are every 9 hours.
Shit. I mean, and you know this about me, actually, I'm actually really close to my mom.
Yeah.
So I talk to my mom constantly. So I don't know what her fear was necessarily with it. My response was, you know, obviously you can, you know, follow me on Instagram if you would like. I find Instagram just a little more peaceful.
I agree.
It's really just kind of like this nice plane, and it does have like the same falsehood, I guess, as Facebook, like everything's happy, but yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, it can be curated, but also like, you know, if you were to look at my Instagram feed, yeah, maybe I choose to leave out the pile of laundry on the floor next to whatever I'm taking a picture of. But, you know, it's not like I'm on my yacht. Like, my Instagram feed is still of like every step of the dinner we just made and then me laying on the couch. Yeah. You know,
that's just legit too. Like, enjoy life's splendors, right? Whether it comes in like the form of a good view or a good meal.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So I want to re-steer. I mean, our conversations.
Sorry.
No, this is, I spend most of every episode apologizing for it just being all over the place. But I mean, we're proving that this is not a scripted show, that we're just like, and this.
I know. But, actually, my friend was asking if I have like some some pre-questions that I could look at. And I was like, no.
So, and you know, I thought about that. I thought about being like, well, here's some, but really, like, I don't feel that, like, I'm not challenging your philosophy on life, but I do want to talk a little bit. I know that there are, I've talked to a few, well, I shouldn't say a few, I've talked to a couple different travelers. Like, one of the people I've interviewed more than once is Dan DeMonte, and he's talked about how traveling for him has allowed him this lifestyle of being able to, like, work a bunch of shifts and then go tour and then come back and do it all over.
He's not traveling anymore, though.
No, that's true. He's got, like, a per diem job. But yeah, just the same, like, he's able to work in such a way that he has, like, this high level of control over when he works.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I want to talk a little bit about the logistics. So, like, for example, what was your process in terms of, like, I'm going to travel, I have to get a recruit?
So I was actually really lucky because I had three pretty close friends that were already traveling. And so I was really fortunate because I was able to just be like, okay, do you have a recruiter? Do you like them?
Can I have their number?
Right. But honestly, I was really fortunate because the recruiter that I instantly clicked with, there was something about her. She's super professional, like really just nice and fun. And I liked her energy. And I know that sounds really stupid, but I felt like I could actually work with her. That she wasn't trying to swindle me in any kind of way or
you
like
getting a sales pitch.
Right. No, I mean, she really was like, hey, this is what I have to offer. If you're interested, get back at me. Whereas I had put my feelers out kind of on my own a little bit and got, I mean, you just get swarmed. I had reached out to a different company and just said, I'm looking at traveling, and just nonstop calls, nonstop, you know, just every day something else. And I am not that kind of person. That
like
is
you're really not interested in the phone ringing all the
really
time.
Unappealing for me. So, yeah. So I was really fortunate that one of the recruiters that was working with another of my friends was just a really good fit for me. I worked with her for the first couple assignments. And then this last one, this is kind of actually a sad little story, but, it's a reality of traveling. While we were down in Georgia, a very smart company came down and offered all of the travelers that were in-house in SGMC, South Georgia Medical Center, free dinner. And so they did recruiting there too, obviously. Huh. I started talking with one of the recruiters there. He is actually a friend of a friend. So I kind of became acquaintances. He started kind of reaching out to me just about looking at assignments and all that stuff. And I think, unfortunately, my recruiter at the time, the one that I said I get along with really well, and she's kind of amazing, she came up with this idea that I would really like Flagstaff. And she started telling me all about it. And she was like, Lindsay, you like to be outside. You like to do all these things. Like, look at Flagstaff. They're apparently really good with their travelers, all this stuff. Unfortunately, this other company offered more money.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds bad, but it was enough money.
It was significant enough that it was worth making the switch.
It was my mortgage. So that's that was like the difference in pay. And, you know, you want to say like, I traveled for the experience and all that stuff, but money comes into it. And I did the right thing. I don't know if that's the right thing, but, I did come back and say, I want to work with you, like make this work. This other company is offering me this. I'd like to stay with this company.
But also I have bills that I need to pay.
You know, and that's the reality of it too.
I don't think you should be apologetic in talking about that, because there are all these extra things that you have to deal with as a traveler that do require more money, more compensation,
right,
for it to be worth your while. Like,
yeah.
And you do have like a brick and mortar home.
I do.
Here in the state that you've got to be responsible for at the end of the day. And so,
well, I think people have this like idea that travelers are just rolling in money, and you know, we make money.
Right. But you also have to get from point A to point B. And
I have a mortgage on top of the rent that I pay.
Right.
You know,
right.
So like that's a reality. I have student loans. I have a phone. I have all the bills that you have, but I pay double for housing.
Well, and then I also imagine that there's the stress of having to renegotiate every, 13 to 18 weeks.
Yeah.
So, you're going to make, potentially a little bit more on your next contract, but you could potentially make a little bit less or have to take a contract somewhere that you don't necessarily want to. So I'm not trying to highlight the negative side of traveling.
No.
But it's true. Like, you have these other considerations that you have to make. It's not just like you're laying on a beach raking in the cash. Like, you've got other things. You've got to pay for the gas to get to the next city. Like,
it's, well, and it's, you know, it's just a balance too. So like I was saying, I did stay in Georgia for some money because the cost of living was low, the pay was high, but I have to say at the same time, Flagstaff is super expensive. And I have taken the lowest contract that I've ever had here and paying the highest rent. So, you have to look at it. And I planned for this. I planned that at some point I was going to have to probably sacrifice a little bit of money for experience. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm doing right now. And this has been the contract where I really did have to look at it and say, is this viable? Like, does this make sense? And honestly, kind of the answer is no, right? I'm not saving any money here, but at the same time, if we're going back to Instagram, my pictures are beautiful. No, but like my are invaluable.
Right. Know, it's like, what is that thing that you're valuing? Is it the time that you get to be somewhere that's totally different from where you grew up?
Right.
You know, it's nice to maybe be in a smaller town with less to do where, you're raking in the cash. So do you try to look at it like an overall balance, not just like, well, I'm in the negative for this trip, when really maybe overall you're kind of still in neutral zone. So you've got to save up in the times where the money's fat and then.
Right.
And then
that's exactly what I did. So like Georgia, you like fill the purse. And here it's like, I'm not in the negative. I'm just not saving.
Right. You're just not raking away for that next European vacation.
Right. Yeah, absolutely not. I think on that, I think I might try to get to Portugal in next year. So on the whole European thing, I just was invited to Portugal. So we'll see.
Are you thinking of Portugal as a traveling nurse or as a vacationer?
No, I've been one of the recruiters, speaking of recruiters, I have been talking to another recruiter that I've never worked with too. And she was really adamant about going to Guam.
Mm-hmm. I've also heard there's a lot of pull to Australia.
Is that right?
I don't know how true that is or if that's a trend that maybe I'm hitting the tail end of. But I know that there was someone that I knew casually through like friends of friends that actually spent, I think, over a year in Australia.
I wonder how that works with licensure.
I wonder the same. I have no idea how that works. Yeah. That might be an interesting episode to plan for the future. I'm only even looking at as someone that's basically hitting her second year mark as a nurse. I'm only now looking at how the hell does this work in other states? If I ever decide to go anywhere, what do I have to do? That kind of. So international
things about Iowa, I mean, obviously is that it's in the compact.
Right.
And that's actually really changed, my experience with traveling too.
Which explain that for people who don't, because up until a few months ago, I didn't know what that was either.
The compact state?
Yeah, the compact state.
So basically they're, I think it's 28 now. I don't want to miss.
But yes, there is nursing license compact states. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically what happens is that within these 20 something states, I am able to practice as a nurse without further licensure. My national board, so the national exam that I took, is valid in all of these 20 states, as opposed to the other states that are not within the compact. Anytime I want to travel to them, I have to obtain a separate license.
Which means you have to apply, you have to pay money, send in fingerprints.
So you go through a background check, you do fingerprints, you do money.
Whereas with a compact state, and I have the list of compact states in front of me. I know it's a long list. Just bear with me. I want to rattle these off super fast. Arizona, Arkansas, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Iowa, Kentucky, Maine, Maryland, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, New Hampshire, North Carolina, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. So of all those states, if you have a license, an active nursing license in one of them, and you want to go to another, they just, it's by endorsement. They say, okay, you have an active license, yep, you're practicing in this state, you're good, come on over. Yep. Which is not to be confused with working for a federal hospital, which if you are working for the federal government, it don't matter where your license is from, you're good. So like if you're deployed for like disaster relief or something like that, then that's totally separate. But anyway, so the compact has changed your ability to travel because you don't have to pay lots of money and go through this whole process every time you want to go somewhere different.
Right. So that, I mean, that, yeah. And that's been like, it's definitely, like I said, I've gone only to compact states, so I didn't have to obtain any further licensure. I do have an Alaska license, obviously.
Because also, at any moment you are ready.
I'm ready. No, I'm ready. I'm doing it. And then I also have a Washington license because I was thinking about doing like West Coast, but like I said, gonna span across. So that will probably be my next.
The thing is that, you know, here in Iowa as a state, even though I feel well compensated for the area that I live in, Iowa is like at the bottom of the list.
It is.
So it's actually interesting because as a nurse, I have a hard time imagining living in a different bracket. Like I have a hard time imagining paying a substantial amount more in rent, knowing that I'm also making more money. Like those numbers in my head make me panic when I go, oh, your average rent in Portland is like $1,700 for like maybe a place, yeah, like 100 square feet less than where I live now. But also I look at wages and I'm like, oh, you make 25,000 more a year than I do right now.
But that would all go to housing.
Right. So but that's just it. But that's just it. So it's all these considerations of where am I going to be and how much money am I actually going to spend to live here?
Yeah. But you know, when going back to our previous conversation, one of those things is the balance of quality of life, right? So yeah, you'll make $25,000 more and you'll pay it all towards rent, but
you also have this amazing city potentially.
Place that you you can do all the things that you want to do. You can see all the things. Like, I mean, I don't know if there's like one city that's all encompassing like that, but I'm just saying that,
the trade-offs are there.
Yeah.
Like you have a dumpier house, but the city is you. Right.
Right. Well, and they say like here, they call it the city with its poverty with a view. That's what they always say about Flag because mm-hmm. it's expensive here. But I also like, I can look out the window right now and see mountains.
Right.
And know that like, I can walk on those mountains if I want to.
Right. And what price would you pay, you know, to be exactly where you want to be?
Right.
Whereas someone who's like allergic to everything and wants to live in a high rise with a doorman, well,
sure,
that exists for you too. It's
absolutely
just a matter of finding where that thing is. I look at you and you've been all these places now and you have these experiences. So I'm sure while there is some level of anxiety that occurs with each new assignment, like for the most part, this is what you do. Like when you're a floater, when you're a traveler,
yeah,
you've got to get used to being uncomfortable. For someone like me, I've only ever worked in, aside from clinicals, like I've worked in one place on one unit with one team, you know? And so even though I've floated all over our large hospital, I feel like we now have these totally different perspectives. And maybe I'm a little bit more afraid of these things that you're like, yeah, it's expensive. In my mind, I'm like, oh my God, how can I do this? But also I'm thinking of it from a perspective where I know what my paychecks look like. And
yeah. When you're talking about money, I mean, there's something really, and I've said this already, I definitely, when I feel nostalgic, I think obviously of the U. I'm not like, oh, remember when I was in Baltimore? That was so great. that's not what I think about. It's not what I like call my home and call my comfort. Definitely. And I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. Like, while I was at the U, rescue was exactly where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful to be able to have that, right? It's, you know, and I don't know if maybe like in my travel experience, I'm still looking for that. Like maybe that is what at the end of the day, you know, like that's the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow kind of thing.
So it's so funny because, you know, Dan DeMonte has said the mm-hmm. same thing in episodes. He said, you know, it's the place, there's no other place like it that exists. Andrew yeah. has said the same thing. And I feel like I still work in this environment and I feel mm-hmm. like I have to be really aware of how lucky I am because so for many sure. people that I've talked to, you know, they have their favorite spot or, you know, the place where they say, well, if it weren't for X, Y, and Z circumstance, I would still be there to this day. But yeah, I think it's a testament to, and also travelers that have come to us have said like,
for sure.
University of Iowa is like talked about as being a great place for travelers. Like we receive travelers really well. Like I've done an entire like, podcast about how you should treat your travelers. But yeah, it's true. I think that it's really, when you find a place that's special, it's hard to find the next place that's like that.
Yeah. Can I just like throw a bunch of fucking cliches at you right now?
Please do.
No place like home. No place like home. And I haven't found that. But the other thing that has been really amazing is
what? Oh man. Yep. It's happening again. You want to hear the rest of our convo? You gotta come back next week. Better yet, subscribe so you don't miss part two. Happy nursing, folks.
Here at Nursing Uncensored, we may be, well, uncensored, but we're not unfiltered. Protected health information has been changed and concealed to comply with HIPAA. The things we talk about are from years of experience with thousands of patients, things we've read, stories we've heard. If you think we're talking about you, we're not. Also, we're real nurses here to provide helpful and accurate information. But don't take anything we say as fact without doing your own research. Refer to your state's Board of Nursing, Practice Acts, and your institution's policies and procedures if you have questions about your practice. Lastly, our very strong opinions are ours alone and do not reflect those of our employers, educational, or professional institutions. Thanks for listening, and happy nursing, folks.